Texas, America, and the world. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'd like to greet our new affiliate, WMQM AM 1600 in Memphis, Tennessee. That's a 50,000-watt station that is going to be bringing Mark Dankos, America, and the Republic Broadcasting Network to a wider conventional radio audience in the American South. And that's in conjunction with our attempt to pick up some additional conventional affiliates, as well as our international shortwave audience, which we're constantly expanding, as well as our Internet radio outreach, which, of course, continues to be developed in the days and the months ahead. We are joined today by Dr. E. Michael Jones. If you do not know him, you need to know him. He's been a past guest on this show. You can find his website at www.culturewars.com. And when you get to that site, you will see that there's an incredible repository of information there that will also give you an opportunity to receive, through subscription, his print edition of Culture Wars. I'm looking at the July and August 2006 edition of this very fine publication, where Dr. Jones has a front cover story entitled Cardinal B and the Jews. I feel that this is an important enough piece that I wanted to bring him back to chat about this a little bit further as it relates to Vatican II. Who are the agents of influence that were behind the scenes in regard to what really happened at Vatican II? And what does it say not simply about what has happened in the Roman Catholic tradition in the years since then, but does this not present to us as we look at Vatican II and what was really going on at that time, a microcosm of a much larger issue as it pertains to the infiltration of not only religious institutions in America, but media and educational outlets and so forth and so on. This is an important piece, and Dr. E. Michael Jones is with us. And Dr. Jones, how are you?
Hello.
Yes, sir. How are you?
Good. Just great.
Good. Hey, listen, I wanted to get into this incredible essay that you've written on Cardinal B and the Jews at the time of Vatican II and the particular doctrine or statement that came out of that council that I think has arguably altered the traditional Roman Catholic teaching about Judaism and about the state of Israel, and the way in which what happened in those years provides us potentially with a much bigger picture in regard to the influence of certain agents of influence in American society generally. And looking at the first paragraph of your essay, Dr. Jones, you talk about the activities of a guy in 1960, a French Jew by the name of Jules Isaac. Why don't we start there with Isaac, and then proceed from there to talk about some of the other main points in your essay that I know that our listeners will be interested in.
Okay. I mean, first of all, I'd like to begin by saying that the Church's teaching did not get changed if you read the document.
Yes.
The document states clearly that the Church is the new Israel, which repudiates the whole idea that Jews have a separate covenant. The document also says that not all Jews at the time of Christ were responsible for his death, which by extrapolation means some Jews at the time of his death were responsible for his death.
Yes, and then I think that gets into not just the Gospel of Matthew and John, but also to stand corrected in what you're saying. You emphasized in your article that it really wasn't the position of the Church that changed, but the interpretation of that statement.
Yeah, I think that's the crucial issue here. In other words, it's not a question of the document itself. It's a question of who gets to interpret the document
and how
it gets interpreted.
Yes. We'll be back with Dr. E. Michael Jones of Culture Wars to talk about his essay from the July-August 2006 edition of his magazine entitled Cardinal B and the Jews. We'll be back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits. No increase to your monthly mortgage payments. No refinancing and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Learn about the new discoveries of MSP Research. Find out about the success MDs, dentists, veterinarians, and others are having with Silver 500. Learn secrets to survival, how to detox the liver, gallbladder, and kidneys, and how over 1,100 doctors are treating Lyme disease, hepatitis C, diabetes, respiratory infections, and many more with success thanks to the help of MSP Research and Silver 500. Microbiologists have tested our mild silver protein and found Silver 500 to be the most effective treatment for B. subtilis, a subgroup of anthrax. Choose the products in your medical supply wisely. Our doctor's manual has grown to over 600 pages. Give us a call at 1-334-493-0420. That's 1-334-493-0420 and see why doctors in five countries use a dozen products that are manufactured by Dr. Bill McFarland. One more time, that's 1-334-493-0420 or visit our website at www.mildsilverprotein.com/home.html.
Come on, Bill. 2 weeks ago, you were riding a bicycle, and today you're showing up in your new car and telling me you're buying a house? What did you do, rob Bill Gates?
No, John, I didn't rob Bill Gates. What I did do is visit the website www.didyourobbillgates.com. That's where I learned how to make $3,000 to $9,000 each and every week, starting with my very first week. It's a simple program that does all the work for you. I'm already up to $25,000 just going on my third week.
Whoa. What was that website again?
It's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Now write this down, John. You should go there and learn how this program can help you become financially independent, too.
Thanks, Bill. I'm going there right now.
Check, please.
You got this one, right, Bill?
Sure, John. Don't forget, it's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Next time, you'll be buying me lunch.
Deal.
America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined by Dr. E. Michael Jones of Culture Wars. I would urge you to get a subscription to this very fine publication, the print subscription. You can also find his website at culturewars.com. We're talking about Dr. Jones' essay today that was in the July-August edition of this publication entitled Cardinal B and the Jews. Dr. Jones, take it away, sir.
Well, part of the problem with interpretation is that they used certain terms. One of the crucial terms was anti-Semitism.
Yes.
In this document. Well, anti-Semitism compared to the history of the Catholic Church, anti-Semitism is a new term. It was created in 1870 by a German by the name of Wilhelm Marr, and it's basically a racial term. Well, the Church has never accepted a racial definition of the Jews. If you go back to the Gospel of St. John, Jesus Christ himself rejected a racial definition of the Jews because the Jews came to him and said, we are the seed of Abraham.
Yes.
And Jesus said, if you were children of Abraham, you would accept me. So the church's position has been clear that the Jews, in order to be children of Abraham or children of Moses, they had to accept Jesus Christ.
Yes.
If the Jews rejected Jesus Christ, they could no longer call themselves children of Abraham and children of Moses, no matter what kind of DNA they had in their cells. And this became the basis for the church's attitude toward the Jews. The church is now the new Israel. There's no racial characteristic or ethnic characteristic needed to be saved. Okay? It became dependent upon behavior and faith. Okay? As a result of that, the church defined the Jew as a rejecter of Christ. And so the only issue then was rejection of Christ. If the Jew rejected rejection of Christ, then he was accepted without prejudice. That has been the tradition of the church. Okay, now Vatican II comes along, and they're suddenly dealing with a term that no one is defining. So who gets to define the term anti-Semitism? Does the church get to define it, or do the Jews get to define it? If the Jews get to define it, it covers a wide space of territory. And that's precisely the problem that we've had ever since Vatican II.
Yes. And, you know, in terms of this whole business of the Jews, I was noting in your essay that there was apparently at the time of the third session of the Second Vatican Council, according to at least one commentator, a big issue that involved the alleged misunderstanding of the council fathers in regard to who they were dealing with, meaning
right.
the Jews.
Right. This comes up with the whole issue of Jules Isaac that
yes.
you mentioned. He wrote a book in French called Jesus and Israel, in which he was constantly referring to the Jews as the people of the Old Testament. Well, wait a minute. What do you mean the people of the Old Testament? We've already been down this road before. The people of the Old Testament were followers of Abraham and Moses, and the followers of Abraham and Moses accept Jesus Christ. We're back to the same old story again.
Yes.
So who says that they are the people of the Old Testament? This is another phrase that sort of gets uncritical acceptance, largely because of the spirit of the times that we're dealing with. We're dealing with the 60s now. The beginning of the 60s, probably one of the events that sort of set the tone for the 60s, what happened in the 60s, was the Vatican Council. And so as a result, the Times gets to determine what these terms mean. And suddenly, when you talk about the Jews as our elder brothers and people of the Old Testament, you're repudiating Catholic doctrine. And the Council Fathers were sort of lured into this, this mindset, largely by the spirit of the times. But then, you know, as I get into the arc, there were other factors as well.
Yes. And, you know, it's interesting in looking through this whole thing as you depicted for us this morning and as I was reading it in your essay, you know, it seems that you have these competing perceptions of the Jews, this claim of Jules Isaac, of course, that the Jews are the people of the Old Testament. And of course, he quite clearly would say that they are, and divorce their identity in that regard from the whole question of whether or not they came to accept Jesus Christ as the Son of God and as the Messiah. But then there's this whole issue of another view of the Jews, which sees them, quote, as the cult of movie stars, pansexualism, and psychoanalysis. What's your spin on that?
Well, I mean, that we're talking about the preliminary documents here.
Yes.
Cardinal Ottaviani was responsible for the preliminary documents of Vatican II, and these documents give a completely different spin on the idea of what the council was called to do. If you read the preliminary documents, it's clear that church leaders like Ottaviani are concerned about the corruption of morals in Europe following World War II. And when they get into this thing, they start naming names, and you brought up some of the names that they named, okay? This is a direct quote. This is also why the church points out as dangerous and condemns as erroneous all theories that are translated into practice concerning the cult of movie stars, naturalism, the so-called sexual education, pansexualism, and certain injurious aspects of psychoanalysis. Well, who are we talking about here? Who's responsible for the cult of movie stars? Who's responsible for psychoanalysis? Who's responsible for Reiki and Wilhelm Reich's pansexualism? Well, it's the Jews. And so what you have here is two competing visions of the Jews that get fought out in the council. Are the Jews the people of the Old Testament, or are they this horde of modernists promoting things like Hollywood movie stars and psychoanalysis? This is the battle that was enjoined during the Second Vatican Council.
Yes, and it seems to me that that is a fault line in this whole issue of interpreting who the Jews are and what they represent that has created a lot of the paradoxes that I see among Protestant evangelicals on this subject, between those who support the Zionist State of Israel today and who have a very positive relationship with the Jewish lobby in this country, and those who don't. It seems to, again, come back to two different takes on who the Jews are and what the implications of that are for an either plus or minus relationship with them in contemporary society.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We've been subjected to a propaganda barrage by certain crucial evangelical leaders, and they simply ignore all of the teaching, the traditional teaching of the church, and make this gratuitous assumption that Israel, there's some type of connection between the Old Testament use of the word Israel and the modern use attached to this the Zionist state in the Middle East. Well, there's a tenuous, it seems to me, a very tenuous connection here. And what this theology or this dispensationalist theology ignores is the whole idea of the church as the new Israel. The church has replaced Israel.
Yes.
The church is the new Israel. There is no Israel being resurrected as a state. The church is the new Israel, and it has been the new Israel ever since the time of Christ's crucifixion and resurrection. Now, the Protestant denominations, the evangelicals, probably have difficulty with this because they have difficulty with the concept of the church. What is the church? You know, every American has a conflict, a difficulty understanding what the church is because of our peculiar history here. But the fact of the matter is that the new Israel, the church is the new Israel.
Yes.
That's the issue. That's the fundamental issue that needs to be clarified here.
And that what you have in the dispensationalist premillennial understanding of prophecy, is precisely, I believe, what you talk about, Dr. Jones, and that is the way in which the Christian church in the dispensationalist worldview is merely a parenthesis, almost an afterthought, in God's dealings with the Jews.
Right. And this is not new. I mean, the history of Christianity, there's always been this temptation to what I would call, or other people have called, Judaizing. Judaizing means basically looking back at the Old Testament and seeing it as a model. It's basically a heretical reading of the Old Testament. The church in the early centuries was very clear. You had to read the Bible with the eyes of faith. If you read the Bible with carnal eyes, you were going to come away with a basically distorted interpretation. And that's pretty much what happened, beginning with the Hussites in Bohemia and the Czech Republic in the 15th century. And it's infected our history because the Puritans were Judaizers. Puritans were basically people who took the Old Testament as their model, and then once you do this with carnal eyes, your enemies are the Amalekites, and anything's justified. And this is certainly the way Cromwell interpreted Scripture when he took on the Irish and the Scots. They were the Amalekites, and so therefore they could be exterminated with impunity. This is the danger of this carnal interpretation of Scripture.
And at some point in your essay, you talk about this whole business of the contemporary utilization of that term Amalekite as it relates not to its original Old Testament context, but it really seems to be the utilization of that Old Testament description as a catch-all phrase that covers everything that is non-Jewish.
Right. Well, what happens here is that you now see yourself as Gideon or Joshua, and anyone who opposes you is an enemy of God, and so therefore you can exterminate.
Yes.
That's the carnal reading of the Old Testament that we call Judaizing.
Yes, which gets into John Hagee of Cornerstone Church here in San Antonio, and a curious interpretation of Genesis chapter 12, verse 3, which in conjunction with this Amalekite idea basically makes those who oppose the modern state of Israel into the enemies of God. Stay tuned.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately one in four families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Did you ever wonder how an opera singer that hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonant frequency. If the resonant frequency making the glass vibrate is powerful enough, the size of the vibration will become so large the glass shatters. Using this same principle, Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease-causing organisms can be destroyed using different resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions Frequency Instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions with no side effects. The 2006 BioSolutions Plus is the easiest to operate frequency instrument ever developed. Its easy reference guide will allow you to begin using the instrument within minutes. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Don't just treat symptoms, eliminate the cause. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free, 1-866-885-6625. That's 1-866-885-6625. Once again, 1-866-885-6625.
Would you enjoy a career where you pick your hours, work for who you want to, when you want to, as much as you want to? No one knows about this hidden career because there is no book, school, or teaching material available. Until now. Learn the trade of window painting. Window Genie is now offering a 3-day workshop on DVD that shows you how to reproduce art, text, and graphics professionally, even if you can't draw a stick man. Secrets, cheater techniques, shortcuts, tips, and tricks are all revealed. Recoup your investment in as little as one job and have a career for life. This training also gives you the skills to do regular sign work, indoor murals, and signage. Begin your new career today. Just call us at 780-457-7109 or visit us at windowgenie.com. Again, that's Window Genie, spelled JEANNIE.com.
This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today by Dr. E. Michael Jones of Culture Wars. You can find his website at culturewars.com. I would strongly urge you, and I say this as one who is not a Roman Catholic, I'm an Evangelical Lutheran, but this Culture Wars publication is an absolutely incredible repository of information. The book reviews, the letters to the editor, the essays are all absolutely first rate. And Dr. Jones' essay on Cardinal B and the Jews, which we're talking about today, which is in the July and August 2006 edition of Culture Wars, is absolutely pivotal in understanding the larger implications of what happened at Vatican II, not simply for the Roman Catholic Church, but the larger implications of this in terms of the whole question of the infiltration of American society generally. And Dr. Jones, just going through this essay, and I have so many things that I can't cover on the radio today because the essay is simply too good and has too much data in it for me to possibly cover with you in any contracted period of time. But just as far as leafing through some of my notes from the last couple of days, there are certain names that come forth in this essay that I think paint a much larger picture in regard to the importance that these names have for what really happened at that time. Jules Isaac is one name that we've talked about a little bit. And as I go through, John Courtney Murray is another one that comes to mind. Robert Blair Kaiser and Malachi Martin leap out at me from these pages. Rabbi Abraham J. Heschel comes up, and the list just goes on and on of some of the people that played a role directly or indirectly in what happened at Vatican II and the implications of what happened at Vatican II and the aftermath. Could you sketch out for us just basically some of the key players who behind the scenes were involved in the attempts on the part of the Jews and the Jewish lobby in this country to moderate the position of the Catholic Church in regard to its teachings about the Jews and about Zionism, and the extent to which those are names that we need to be familiar with?
Well, the most crucial figure would be Malachi Martin. I don't know how many of your listeners are familiar with Malachi Martin, but he died a few years ago. And he was familiar to the evangelical audience because he did a lot of books on exorcism. And he would go on a lot of those radio stations and talk about exorcism. He was a charming guy. I talked to him a number of times about various things. At the end of his life, he wrote a book on the Jesuits, which was supposedly the inside view. Malachi Martin was himself a former Jesuit, and so there was some credence to that until you started reading the book, and then it was just full of mistakes, which the Jesuits rejoiced in and published in America, their magazine. And then he got into the Roman Aklef. The most famous of these was a Windswept House, which purported to be like the insider view of what was going on in the Catholic Church. And, you know, they would be names, characters, and then I don't know how, my copy had a copy of the list of, you know, Cardinal so-and-so is really Cardinal Bernardine, and so on and so forth. I actually had one, a list there, came with my copy of the book. I don't know whether he was responsible for it or not. But so this was supposed to be the inside story, and there were stories of black masses being celebrated by cardinals and a woman being violated at one of these masses. Now, I happen to, strangely enough, I knew that woman because I was doing a story for the magazine in which this woman came forth and she claimed that she had been violated by a high-ranking cardinal in the United States at one of these black masses. So I thought, well, this is hot stuff, so I tried to pursue it and couldn't get anywhere with this lady. Couldn't get her to give me a date or a place or anything, nothing. So I just never used the story. Well, here the story shows up in Malachi Martin's book. Now, this is the later Malachi Martin, sort of the angry conservative. The Malachi Martin at the time of the council was a completely different guy. As a matter of fact, he was probably describing himself when he was describing all these Vatican villains, you know, the New World Order guys. These were the Illuminati, the latter-day Illuminati. He was talking about himself, I think, in these things, because at this time he was clearly an agent. He was an agent of the Jews. That's as simple as you can put it. And this comes out in Robert Blair Kaiser's book, Clerical Error.
Yes, and Robert Blair Kaiser, as I understand it from your essay, was an editor at Time Magazine.
He was a correspondent at Time Magazine.
Correspondent, I'm sorry, yes.
A former Jesuit, later Malachi Martin would be, and he got the job of reporting on the Vatican Council along with an unlimited expense account. And so his apartment became the center of these soirees every Sunday night where the liberal group would meet and talk about strategy in getting their views across at the council.
Yes, including people like Otto Preminger, the very famous Hollywood director, as I'm looking at my notes from your essay. It's quite fascinating to see what Robert Blair Kaiser of Time magazine later figured out about Malachi Martin and his relationship to the American Jewish Committee, among other things. We'll get back to this. This is Mark Gancos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Back with Dr. E. Michael Jones of Culture Wars. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Come on, Bill. 2 weeks ago, you were riding a bicycle, and today you're showing up in your new car and telling me you're buying a house? What did you do, rob Bill Gates?
No, John, I didn't rob Bill Gates. What I did do is visit the website www.didyourobbillgates.com. That's where I learned how to make $3,000 to $9,000 each and every week, starting with my very first week. It's a simple program that does all the work for you. I'm already up to $25,000 just going on my third week.
Whoa. What was that website again?
It's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Now write this down, John. You should go there and learn how this program can help you become financially independent, too.
Thanks, Bill.
I'm going there right now. Check, please.
You got this one, right, Bill?
Sure, John. Don't forget, it's www.didyourobbillgates.com. Next time, you'll be buying me lunch.
Deal.
The Idaho Observer is one of the last independent American presses and isn't afraid to print the truth. The Idaho Observer is a monthly 24-page hard copy newspaper in its fifth year of addressing important issues affecting all freedom-loving Americans. If you are concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you, then subscribe to the Idaho Observer. Only $25 for 12 monthly issues. Idaho Observer readers receive vital insight into events as they unfold. Our articles editorially emphasize activism and serve as a networking tool for like-minded individuals determined to make a difference. The Idaho Observer, printing what you need to be fully informed on issues that matter to real Americans. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307. That's 208-255-2307.
Back. This is Mark Gancos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today by Dr. E. Michael Jones of Culture Wars. You can find him at culturewars.com. I have really profited by reading the print edition of his publication, the July-August 2006 version of it, with his essay, Cardinal B and the Jews, which we're talking about today, and a lot of the other things in this publication in regard to book reviews, other op-ed pieces, other essays, letters to the editor. This is really an incredible repository of information. And when I remind myself to call his office this week, I will become a paid subscriber to this magazine, even though I am not a Roman Catholic. It's absolutely invaluable in terms of the data that's in it and the analysis that follows the data. In my judgment, is absolutely first rate as well. Dr. Jones, back to this whole business of Malachi Martin and his relationship, of course, to the Time correspondent Robert Blair Kaiser, and also his relationship to the American Jewish Committee, and the fact that he ended up writing under a pseudonym for their publication Commentary, and was appearing with a series of pseudonyms that involved essays that appeared in other publications. Quite clearly, he was a pretty significant agent of influence.
Turns out he was a double agent as well.
Yes.
He showed up at, I mentioned the soirees at Bob Kaiser's apartment. Maliki Martin showed up, and he's a, I mean, I know from personal experience, he's a charming guy. And so he was pretty soon telling Maliki, or telling Bob Kaiser how important his meetings were, and he insinuated himself into the Kaiser family. Kaiser was married at the time. And Kaiser started using him as a source, and suddenly he realized that he wasn't a reliable source. He got in trouble once, and then other people got in trouble by quoting Maliki Martin. And Maliki Martin was playing a double game here. He was basically trying to make himself indispensable to the Jewish organizations by giving the impression that he was going to save the schema on the Jews that became Nostra Aetate from the predations of the conservatives. And that's that was the role he was playing. And at a certain point, the scales fell from Robert Blair Kaiser's eyes, in particular when he showed up at his apartment with representatives of the American Jewish Committee and B'nai B'rith, the ADL, in tow. And then he concluded, after mulling this over a little bit, concluded, this is Kaiser, a direct quote from his book, noted that Maliki always had a wallet stuffed with $100 bills, and he said, now I knew where he was getting it. In other words, from the American Jewish Committee, where he and the ADL, where he was acting as a paid lobbyist.
Yes, and apparently in your essay, the name of Zachariah Schuster comes up in this regard as apparently
right.
the conduit for the money between the American Jewish Committee on the one hand and Maliki Martin on the other. And reading through this account, it's absolutely sordid to subsequently discover in the pages of your essay that Robert or Bob Kaiser ended up finding out that Maliki Martin was involved sexually with Kaiser's wife, and that as a part of this process, Martin had begun his liaison with Mary Kaiser by giving her a copy of Betty Friedan's book, The Feminine Mystique, and going on to continue reading this sordid account, Bob Kaiser, the Time correspondent, began to become increasingly suspicious of Maliki Martin, and discovered that, of course, in his wife's belongings, that there was a strip of birth control pills that Kaiser discovered there, and that as he was finding out what kind of a person Maliki Martin was morally, that was about the time that Kaiser started coming across these connections between Maliki Martin and Zachariah Schuster and these other people connected to the Paris offices of the American Jewish Committee. This, again, it seems to me, gets into the whole business of agents of influence that the average member of the public never encounters. And as I was looking at Maliki Martin at one point in this entire account of what a despicable, sinister person he apparently was, he ended up writing a book entitled The Pilgrim. The Pilgrim. Give us a little bit of enlightenment as to what the contents of The Pilgrim are and the extent to which this was basically, apparently, Maliki Martin parroting the Jewish establishment line on the Roman Catholic Church.
Yeah, he wrote it under a pseudonym, a Michael Serafian. And in it, he basically gave the Jewish party line, namely that the church was responsible for the Holocaust. I mean, this is preposterous, but it's part of the attack on the church that began after World War II. The attack on Pius XII is part of it. His direct quote is, "No one conscious of what has made modern Europe can deny that the pyres and the crematoria, the mephitic smoke and stench of the extermination camps in Nazi Germany were, if not the logical conclusion, at least one extremist consequence of the normal Christian attitude to the Jews." Well, I mean, that's preposterous. I mean, the Pope, the new Pope, Benedict the 16th has gone out of his way to say that Nazism was a pagan ideology, and so don't hold the church responsible for it. And here is this guy giving exactly the Jewish line on this slander of the entire Catholic Church. So,
which is, as I was reading through your account of this, kind of goes back to this French Jew in 1960, this guy Jules Isaac, because as you point out in the very opening paragraph of your essay, in a couple of Isaac's books, including this Jesus at Israel, published in 1946, Isaac hammered home two points which presented the Jewish side of this Catholic-Jewish dialogue. One, the claim that the Catholic Church had preached anti-Semitism for going on 2,000 years, and two, that the teaching of the Catholic Church found its ultimate expression in the mass murder of Jews during World War II. It seems that that was the launching point for Martin's diatribe.
Yeah. Jules Isaac said that this tradition, the most docile sons of the church, a tradition which moreover is infinitely noxious and murderous, and which I have said and shall repeat leads to Auschwitz and other places. Here's Martin taking the party line of Jules Isaac in his attack on the church, working as an assistant to Cardinal Bea at the time, and working reputedly for the council. I mean, the stories around Malachy Martin were pretty notorious even before Kaiser's book came out. His fictional accounts of his adultery with Mary Kaiser were in books by Michael Novak, novels by Michael Novak and Ralph McInerney. He was always portrayed as a sinister figure. But it was Kaiser's book that really brought it out of the realm of fiction and said not only that Malachy Martin had seduced his wife, but that he was collaborating with the Jews, and the Jews were actually helping him. The American Jewish Committee was going to offer her a job if she ran off with Malachy Martin.
And what's particularly fascinating is the way in which you've already mentioned to us that Malachy Martin, in turn, was the face of Roman Catholicism seen by many evangelical Protestants in America, where that was the package that certain people wanted evangelical Protestants to see as a so-called good representative of Roman Catholicism. And it seems to me to be quite suggestive that with what we now know about Malachy Martin through your research and through some of these other books and articles that have appeared, is that if he was in fact the Jewish lobby's chief agent of influence in trying to subvert the Roman Catholic Church from within, it is striking to me that he is also the face that was presented to evangelical Protestants in a favorable light in regard to Roman Catholicism.
Yeah. Well, at the end of his life, a lot of Catholics were taken in as well. I got lots of angry letters to the editor after this article came out, people who had heard Martin at the end of his life and were all convinced that he was a defender of traditional Roman Catholicism.
Yes, and that was my uninformed interpretation of him, just in one or two of his books that somehow found their way into my library over the years. I didn't study them in detail, but I looked through them. And certainly if, as a relatively uninformed person at the time on Roman Catholicism, if somebody had said to me 20 to 25 years ago as an evangelical Protestant, hey, are there any good books by a Roman Catholic that you can recommend to me that we might have some commonality with, I probably would have pulled those off the shelf.
Well, I think that what comes out in Kaiser's memoir as well is that it was at this time, in other words, when the Pilgrim appeared, that Kaiser made his contacts with the establishment, the big publishing houses in New York City. And he never lost those contacts. He had those contacts for his entire life. And producing one potboiler or after another, producing books like The Jesuit, which were completely ripped apart because of their lack of factuality, he never lost his contacts with the New York publishing houses. And so he was in a position to influence a lot of people.
Yes, and that gets into, you know, this whole business of the politicizing of publishing houses and the politicizing of news media, print journals, and electronic agents of influence in regard to corporate news media. When we start, and I include myself in the we here, when we start understanding what your research tells us about these matters, It may underscore the extent to which those of us who have been deceived have been deceived not only on this subject of Vatican II but and Maliki Martin, but deceived on a whole host of other things as well, that suggests a need for a lot more discernment on these subjects that in turn is related to availing ourselves of a lot more quantitative and qualitative data on these subjects that most of us have not had before, because we haven't been exposed to the right sources of information, of which I count your culture wars as one.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you. But, I mean, there was an element of mystification going on in the reporting of the council. The council was supposed to be a contest between liberals like John Courtney Murray and conservatives like Cardinal Ottaviani. And that was largely the doing of Time magazine, and it was largely the doing of Robert Blair Kaiser. And what comes out later through Kaiser himself is that really wasn't the dynamic of the council. The dynamic was you had Jewish agencies like the American Jewish Committee, whose agent was Zechariah Schuster, and the ADL, their agent was Joseph Lichten, working behind the scenes to change the church's teaching. That was the issue, not the liberal conservative stuff.
Yes, and as I look at this, it seems to me that at the same time that we're now contemplating the role of Robert Blair Kaiser's Time magazine and all of this, and of course Maliki Martin is a key liaison, secret liaison between the American Jewish Committee and the Roman Catholic Church and also Time magazine, something else comes into play here as well in regard to manipulation. And I think that people need to see this not only for what it was at the time, but the way in which these patterns crop up again, and the way certain things have a way of popping up in entertainment media and news media at just the right time to reinforce something that a particular lobby wants to underscore in the public mind. And I'm referring to something that's on page 24 of your essay, where you were talking about the fact that in addition to using these Jewish agents of influence like Lichten and Schuster to lobby the church fathers in Rome, the Jews sought to change the climate of public opinion by other means. I'm quoting directly from your article on page 24. On February the 20th, 1963, Rolf Hochhuth's play Der Stellvertreter, in English, The Deputy, opened in Berlin. In it, Hochhuth portrayed Pope Pius XII as criminally negligent because of his silence over the deportation of the Jews during World War II. After the play opened in London, Giovanni Battista Montini, the Archbishop of Milan, and soon to be Pope Paul VI, attacked the play as a defamation of Pius XII, whose secretary he had been. The Pope was probably aware that Erwin Piscator, a Jewish communist, along with the already mentioned Jewish organizations, provided the financial backing for the play. Of course, and then you go on for quite some length in this essay to describe all of what was involved in this Rolf Hochhuth play, Der Stellvertreter, or in English, The Deputy, and not only the content that was in it, but the convenient way in which it appeared at the time that it did, and subsequently found its way, of course, into Paris and Basel, Switzerland, and Vienna, New York, and Tel Aviv. There would seem to be a very interesting trail of associations that I'm just guessing at in regard to this particular playwright and some of the other agents of influence in the Jewish lobby who wanted this message brought to as wide an audience as possible in order to pressure the Vatican Council.
Yeah, or the Pope, specifically the Pope.
Yes.
I mean, this is an attack on Paul VI, saying if you don't go along, you'll be defamed too. And we'll cook up something on you. It was to intimidate the Pope, and as I say in the article, a lot of this intimidation backfired. And I think the deputy, at least in these circles, backfired, because it was Monsignor Oesterreicher, who was a Jew, who converted to Catholicism, and as a result was persona non grata among the Jewish organizations. It was he who brought up what was going on here. He said Jewish human relations agencies will have to speak out against the deputy in unmistakable terms, otherwise they will defeat their own purpose. Well, he saw what was going on. It was this manipulation of public opinion to cow the church into going along with this agenda. You know, they had the ability to do this. Now, we're still being subject to this type of disinformation. National Review, just a week or so ago, published an article by the guy who's claiming to be the head of the Romanian Communist Secret Service Intelligence Agency, in which he says the communists were behind the production of the deputy and the defamation of Pius XII. Well, what do you mean? What do you mean? You mean just the communist, or the fact that was Piscator a communist, or was he a Jew, or was he both, or who was how was he acting in this regard? And if it were just the communist, how do you explain the fact that this is still going on? Is Daniel Goldhagen an agent of the communists? He is the man who has now resurrected the whole tired story of Pius XII and turned it into another calumny against this man. This is the type of misdirection that we're seeing in magazines like National Review, which was an agent of influence, designed to subvert conservatism and to subvert the Catholics' understanding of their own religion.
Yes, and so if you take Bill Buckley's National Review as a baseline here, it seems to me that this can be well nigh argued that Bill Buckley's publication has allowed the Jewish lobby to put its fingers in the pie of a number of constituencies that otherwise, in a more well-informed environment, would oppose what's going on. We'll take that up again in our last few minutes with Dr. E. Michael Jones of Culture Wars. This is Mark Dankos, America on RBN, coming from San Antonio Live. Stay tuned.
Did you ever wonder how an opera singer that hits a high note is able to shatter a wine glass? Well, the glass has a natural resonant frequency. If the resonant frequency making the glass vibrate is powerful enough, the size of the vibration will become so large the glass shatters. Using this same principle, Royal Raymond Rife discovered that disease-causing organisms can be destroyed using different resonant frequencies. The BioSolutions frequency instrument uses the same technology for relief or elimination of pain and disease conditions with no side effects. The 2006 BioSolutions Plus is the easiest to operate frequency instrument ever developed. Its easy reference guide will allow you to begin using the instrument within minutes. Customer satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Don't just treat symptoms, eliminate the cause. For more information, call BioSolutions toll-free, 1-866-885-6625. That's 1-866-885-6625. Once again, 1-866-885-6625.
We've all considered solar power at one time or another, and self-sufficiency will be your key to a better future. Ken Solar can help you get off the grid and become self-sufficient with solar power, and for a lot less than you would think. One of Ken's most popular items right now is the new solar power generator, for a lot less than you'd expect. This portable system can chop off nearly a third of your electric bill, a good start for any families out there wanting to get solar power for your home. Visit Ken's website at kensolar.com for free downloads, free videos, and how-tos, and of course, the new solar power generator. Use the coupon code RBN with your purchase and save an additional 10% off your order. Get a solar power generator now from kensolar.com at 239-677-3073. Again, that's 239-677-3073 or on the web at kensolar.com. Ken Solar, the home of all your solar needs.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits. No increase to your monthly mortgage payments. No refinancing and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
We'll be right back.
coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our guest has been Dr. E. Michael Jones of Culture Wars, which you can find at culturewars.com. And really, in order to do justice to his research and that of the other writers that he has in this publication, I'd really urge you to get a print subscription to Culture Wars. And the information about that you can find at culturewars.com. But, Mike, in our last few minutes here, I wanted to ask you something about Bill Buckley and National Review. When I think of the latest information or disinformation that you indicate that he has published once again in National Review, is it fair to say that National Review is an example of the way in which the Jewish lobby has brought before not only Catholic conservatives, but in front of Protestant conservatives and secular political conservatives in the United States, has brought information to them that continually points away, deliberately points away from the role of the Jewish lobby in so many areas of American life, the abortion industry, the pornography industry, the neoconservative control of American foreign policy. We could go on and on. Is it safe to say that that's really what Buckley's National Review has been?
Yeah, I think that's an accurate description of what it's been. I mean, let's put it this way. Don't just take my word. I recommend in this regard Murray Friedman's book, The Neoconservative Revolution, Jewish Intellectuals and the Shaping of Public Policy. Now, Murray Friedman is a former official with the American Jewish Committee. This is an unabashedly self he's in full agreement with all the stuff that happened here, and he talks about the founding of National Review, its Jewish founding fathers, and the role that the Jews played in shaping National Review and conservatism, and ultimately leading to what we call neoconservatism and the takeover of American foreign policy and the debacle in Iraq and the whole thing. But it's in Murray Friedman's book, which I recommend people reading. The sort of the AJC, the American Jewish Committee, insider's view of what National Review was.
And what is the title of Murray Friedman's book again?
The Neoconservative Revolution, Jewish Intellectuals and the Shaping of Public Policy.
Very good. And, you know, I'm sure that that's something that probably will take up a little bit on Friday with Dr. Robert Sungenis when he is on this show for 3 hours from the...
Yeah, I'd also like to mention that Murray Friedman also goes into the career of Ralph Reed, which
yes,
is important
okay.
for evangelicals. And, I mean, I met Ralph Reed years ago, and at the time I thought he was the associate of Pat Robertson, which he was to a certain extent when he was head of the Christian Coalition. But Murray Friedman makes pretty clear that Ralph Reedman was the protege of Jack Abramoff.
And now that's public information in regard to the way in which Reed's name surfaced with Abramoff in terms of this Indian gambling money controversy and Reed's role in that when he was, you know, that was exposed when Reed was running for lieutenant governor of Georgia. And I began to smell a rat. I'm a slow learner in all of this, but I remember as a Buchanan supporter in 1996 that when I was at the Texas State Republican Convention, I was trying to show a group of Republicans some of this information on Ralph Reed and his support of Bob Dole, which I did not understand at the time, but I think I have a much better grasp on now, thanks to people like Dr. E. Michael Jones. This is Mark Dankoff's America, signing off from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Again, you can find Dr. E. Michael Jones at culturewars.com. I'd like to thank him for being on today to discuss his article, Cardinal Bia, the Jews, and Nostra Aetate. We'll be back tomorrow. God bless you.